Started. Everyone, please find your spots. Everyone seems to have their spots, so we have a quorum. So I'm going to call this meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee to order. Before we get into any of the business regarding resolutions or minutes or anything else, I've asked, because of some of the concerns that have been raised and conversations that have been happening, around Samadhi, I've asked the executive director of Samadhi to join us for an update and to be able to answer any questions that anyone has. So before we get into business, I will give David McNamara from Samadhi a few minutes to speak, and then we'll open the floor to legislators for questions. David?
Hi, Chairman. I just wanted to hand these to me. Hello everyone, I'm David McNamara, I'm the executive.
David, if you don't mind, could you move to the side and maybe come up here, because we live stream the meetings and the camera's literally right behind you. So.
That's fine.
Joanne, if you want to sit at the table, you're more than welcome to, like wherever you want. But if you sit on it, it'll go down and then it'll pop out. There you go. All right.
Should I sit over?
You can stand. Yeah, if you want to stand here, I'll move off to the side, whatever you want. But yeah.
Oops. Hi, I'm David McNamara. I'm the executive director of Samadhi, and I just came to tell you a little bit about our programs, our organization in general. I made up this this flyer basically, which answers a lot of the questions. I wanted to there've been a lot of misinformation going on, I guess, and just to kind of delineate some of the different programs that we have. So. First, we have an outreach center, which is at 150 Sauk Hill Road, which I think many of you are familiar with. The outreach center is open 14 hours a day. Basically, we serve any individuals who show up who need help. Some people are looking for housing. Some people are looking for medical attention. Some people are looking for treatment. We also run about 60 hours of programming in that center every week. So we have meetings. We have groups. We have other groups from outside come in and hold their meetings there as well. Things like nonviolent communication, refuge recovery, HSTEP recovery, Heroin Anonymous also uses a room there. We also have educational programs that we have in that building. We train people to become certified recovery peer advocates. So we basically have trained 137 people to become certified recovery peer advocates. 37 of them have jobs, 15 work for us. So that's one aspect of our program, right? That's basically the outreach center is kind of where we started. That's where we were in 2019. This program basically started, I started this with my savings account pretty much in 2019 out of a need that I saw. Overdose deaths were we actually had the highest rate of overdose in New York State at that point when we started the program. We've reduced quite a bit. I don't know where we are now, but we're much lower than that. Basically just to fill in the gaps, because we saw that there was a need, that things were not happening. We had over I think 71 overdose deaths last year. So basically, the outreach center is a place where people can check in. It's also connected to our 24/7 hotline. The 24/7 hotline is not just a warm line, but we actually send out certified recovery peer advocates 24/7 if someone is in danger of overdose or in need of housing or in need of any type of help. We send out our street outreach team 24/7. Then the second part of our organization is our OASIS H22 outpatient treatment center. So this is a an OASIS outpatient treatment center for people suffering with substance use disorder. And we got our license on October 15th of 2022. We passed our audit in the summer of 23, just got a full certification for 3 years moving forward. So, and basically the outpatient treatment center is very similar to Bridgeback or Step One, just that we use some of the techniques that we use are slightly different, dealing more with trauma and the underlying causes of the addiction. In about 5 months ago, we received a grant from OASIS to create the first mobile outpatient clinic, which you see some pictures of it in the book. So that will be, we're hoping that's going to be on the road in about 3 weeks. It's being customized right now. The interior is being customized, and then it'll be wrapped, and it'll be out. So this vehicle will travel all throughout Ulster County, bringing treatment services, addiction treatment services to a lot of the rural areas of Ulster County, as well as, you know, some of the areas where we have the highest rate of use in Ulster County. And then the third component of our organization is Somati Refuge, which is a emergency housing facility in Saugerties, New York. So basically, in 2020-2021, we were part of a program through the county where it was called co-location services. So we would send our CERPAs out, our Certified Recovery Peer Advocates out, and we would go to some of the hotels like the Wenton or the Roadway, and basically be there to serve people if they needed help. The problem is that we were sitting in cars in the parking lot and weren't really able to help people. And these motels, of course, have high incidence of fatal overdose. So last December, we were given the opportunity. There was a residence that was already an inn, which is the same as a motel, but just under I think it's under 40 rooms. It's designated as an inn instead of a motel. And so basically we're able to create an emergency housing facility where we basically have more supervision. Motels basically have one person sitting in an office at night, so if somebody is in trouble, nobody's checking, nobody knows what's going on. So we have an emergency housing facility that both, we have 24/7, you know, people watching and taking care of the people that you know, could be in danger. You know, we're not just working with people with substance use disorder. We're working with basically anyone that the SS, you know, calls us and refers people. So we tend to take a lot of people that are not, you know, that may not be able to get into some of the other places. So we do work with people with, you know, mental health challenges, with substance use disorder. So that's pretty much, I don't know how long, 5 minutes.
That was 5 minutes.
Okay.
There's just a lot to say. I'm sure there is, and I'm sure people have questions. Yeah. So if you don't mind moving aside, because I'm continuing to run the meeting, but I do want you to stay near the front so that you can answer questions if folks have them. That's fine. So does anyone have any questions for David?
Yes.
Yeah, Legislator Maloney.
I got a question. We had a lot of issues over in the first location in Kingston. We've had former legislators come and speak about what they have witnessed, pretty graphic behavior, drug dealing. A former legislator talks about being threatened by drug dealers right out in front of there. We moved down the road in Kingston. What changed? What changed in your approach to have a different result from that first location in Kingston?
Mm. So the first location in Kingston, was an outreach center, and we served the people of that community. I don't know about anyone being threatened. At that point we were just serving the people in the community who needed help. I don't know as far. I mean, there was drug use in the neighborhood before we got there. We didn't bring.
This was specific to the Somati location. I think Peter Warren speaks pretty intensely about living next door, what he and even children had seen as far as sexuality in public, drug use in public. on the Samadhi, at the Samadhi location, right at the...
It was in the alley behind the building that we rented.
Out in front.
Yeah.
In the alley, people that were walking in and out of your location, drug dealing, you know, to people, you know, then turning around when he's staring at them and basically being pretty aggressive with them. Some pretty alarming behavior surrounding your location. And now you move down the road. What has changed in your approach that those kinds of things still aren't happening there? Because to be honest with you, that's what I am hearing from former and current employees, first responders, clients, you know, present day residents of Samadhi that are all saying the same thing, that there's drug dealing, there's heavy drug use, and the drug use doesn't just stop at residents and visitors, that it's actually employees. And I've been told that you have been made aware of a lot of these complaints. So are you aware of these complaints?
I am. We have had complaints, and we've removed people, you know, from the site. We find out. I mean, it's an emergency housing facility.
Are you acknowledging you've had complaints about employees doing drugs?
I have not. I mean, I did have an employee that we did have to let go because we did get complaints. Happens in most organizations. I mean, it's not unique to us. You know, we run an emergency housing facility, so just like any other emergency housing facility, people are coming in from the street. We don't, you know, we're not doing background checks. We don't, you know, so things, you know, people can come in and be in active use. They can, you know, various things can happen. We pay attention to what's going on. We do the best that we can to keep everyone safe. And when we find something that, you know, is endangering anybody, we ask people to leave. It is emergency housing. We're not allowed to, you know, check people's rooms or do drug testing or anything like that.
Is there a difference between, let's just pick one location, in Sovereignty's there's the Went and you have Skytop, you know, these tip colonial. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference between what you are providing and what the Wenton is providing?
You're speaking about our emergency housing facility.
Washington Avenue.
Yeah. The difference primarily is that people are not dying from overdoses because basically we have more people paying attention and watching and helping people that might be in crisis. In the locations that you've mentioned are.
But as far as services go, is there a difference or it's just basically a room?
It's emergency housing that is supported by certified recovery peer advocates.
Is there therapy going on there? Is there?
We have an outside grant. We have people that come in. It's not a program. It's therapists that offer their services for free because they're paid by a grant. They don't work for us. Yes.
Can I just clarify that? So the difference the difference between, for example, your emergency housing, which came to, is only that you have certified people there that can have, and you're watching them more carefully.
Much more carefully, yeah.
And as you say, the only difference is that they don't die there.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were not in a facility, and they're in a different facility, their chance of death is higher.
Much higher.
Legislator Maloney, go ahead.
Do you have... employees that work at could the same employee end up at Washington Avenue and on Salt Hill and Broadway? Does that ever happen? Do employees work in multiple places?
Some employees can work at the outreach center and at the emergency housing facility. The Oasis outpatient clinic requires a different kind of background check and different kind of certification and licensure. So. Generally, people that work at 451 would not work at the Broadway location.
If you work at the Washington Avenue facility, that's the only place you're working?
You could work there or the Outreach Center. Some people work at both places.
Okay.
Yeah.
When we get into accounting later and funds being commingled between whether it's Novo, Oasis, County, if you're paying employees that are working at multiple facilities,
Documented, so the people that are paid for by the grant for, you know, that is going towards Samadhi Refuge, there are certain employees that only work at 451. You asked me in general, but you know, in general we have
accounted for. We can see
it's accounted for. Yes, sir.
You can separate that.
Mm-hmm.
With regard, I'm just going to call it Narcan. I know there's different. There may be another name for
this. Naloxone is the active ingredient, but Narcan is the brand.
Do you consider the administration of Narcan a life-threatening event?
Life-threatening?
I mean, is that a life-threatening event needing Narcan to stay alive?
It can be. It depends on the situation. But generally, Narcan is not dangerous in any way to an individual.
No, I'm not saying the Narcan itself. I'm saying the idea that you're getting Narcan to stay alive. If you get Narcan, if you're
falling. Generally, it's a life-threatening event, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is that documented at your facilities?
Yes.
You document it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you contact the authorities? Did the authorities know that there was a Narcan administration and somebody needed that not to die?
We generally do. Sometimes we have people that say, if you call the authorities, we're gonna run off. And in that case, we will bring them to the hospital ourselves, because having somebody run off, the first thing that you want to do is make sure that somebody is not alone and by themselves. What happens when you call the authorities, quite often, if people have open warrants, they can get arrested as well. So sometimes individuals want to leave the scene if we say that we're going to call 911. That, of course, is the protocol, but we do have individuals who...
Can you produce any proof of that protocol? Because I have an alarming amount of people, former, current employees, clients, first responders, town board members in my town, that all tell me that the people are told to call you, not 911, and unless you need a second administration of Narcan, that they are told not to call 911 and to avoid calling 911.
Yeah, no, there's no, I mean, I could not, I couldn't take all those calls. I mean, they don't call me.
What do you mean?
Legislator Maloney asked a question, let him answer it.
What I'm saying is people are not calling me to decide if 3 o'clock in the morning someone needs to be Narcaned. You know, their first thing is they're going to call 911. If the person says, if you call 911, I'm going to leave, they're going to stay with the person, they're going to contact everyone in management, and they're going to try to get the person to the hospital.
So the only time 911 is not called is after the person comes to,
mm-hmm,
and is aware enough to answer a question.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of your protocol to ask the person in case they have a warrant. Do you have a warrant? Otherwise,
we don't ask them if they have a warrant. We just say we'd like to call 911 to make sure. It depends. If generally with Narcan, people come to instantly. If they don't come to instantly, we call 911 immediately, right? Because the protocol is that you deliver the first Narcan. If you don't get, you know, any signs of them coming back from the Narcan, you deliver the second dose. So in between the first dose and the second dose, you would call 911.
So what percentage would you say of Narcan usage is documented or call, authorities are called and notified?
I would have to look at the numbers. Percentage-wise, I would have to look at the numbers.
How often are client residents of any of these facilities administering Narcan on another resident?
How often are they?
Yeah.
I believe we had 4 instances in the last year.
That's all documented. Would mm-hmm. you share the documentation, and could you share of the documentation without, you can, we can do it carefully without names or anything,
mm-hmm.
but I'd like to see that you are documenting each and every time you use Narcan, and I'd like to compare that to, if it is documented, I'd love to compare to the 911 calls to see how often. Do residents become staff at Washington Avenue at night?
We have 2 residents who took the SERPA training and then began working there, but we generally don't like to hire people who are residents to become staff.
Or usually quasi-staff. That's another thing I'm being told by a lot of sources, including employees.
Right.
That there's times you don't have employees and residents there are quote unquote staff.
Yeah, no, they're anybody who's working there has generally gone through the SERPA training, has been trained, and there's no quasi staff really.
Have you had any complaints about drug dealing out of Washington Avenue?
We have had, we've been told about, like I said, we've been told about people who've been drug dealing, and we have asked them to leave the residence. We had one individual who wouldn't leave. We called the police, and they said we had no evidence, so they couldn't evict. We had to do a formal eviction.
Do you know the date that the police were called?
I'm not off the top of my head. I'd have to look at the report.
Were you ever told about an individual dealing drugs there that actually set up a camera outside his room to assist with his drug dealing?
No.
Were you ever told about an incident where there was a break-in and someone was assaulted, so somebody that was dealing drugs there was assaulted, their door was kicked in, they were assaulted, and drugs and money were stolen from that individual? Told it went unreported, but the staff knew about it, and there were questions to upper management about the camera beforehand, and they were told to let the camera stay. Do you recall this?
I don't. I'd have to check into it. Yeah, I don't. You're saying that the resident put up a camera?
I'm told that employees actually called upper management, Samadhi, and complained that, look, there's blatant drug dealing. The individual even went as far as to set up a camera, and they were told to stand down and let it go.
I don't know about any camera being set up.
Doors being broken or things needing to be fixed?
Yeah, things need to be fixed all the time. We have mentally ill people. We've had two incidents of violence and people had to leave. That's any violence, people are immediately asked to leave.
Was one of those situations a door being kicked in?
There was a door that was kicked.
Perhaps
yeah.
Perhaps that's the incident.
Yeah, and that's the person who was evicted actually.
For the drug dealer.
For suspected drug dealer. Yeah.
So that's kind of verifying the story. Drug dealing, door kicked in.
The person was allegedly. We were told allegedly that they were, and then there was a door kicked in. I don't know that those were connected at all, but.
So let's go to Legislator Stewart.
I just had a quick, I was curious if your employees are subjected to drug tests.
They are our employees at the outpatient clinic are required to do drug testing if we feel it's necessary.
Okay.
Our employees in outreach and at Samadhi Refuge are not. Yeah.
In the facility on Washington Avenue, Socrates, do they take drug tests there?
They do not. No.
Might that be a policy that you might consider stating?
Generally, if someone is having a problem with addiction, we generally know about it because we're a very open organization. People come to us. Our policy is that if someone is having an issue, they get paid leave for 3 weeks and are required to come to programs at the outpatient clinic. So they're given treatment. So it's not like, we don't run that type of an organization where we would drug test you and kick you out. We would offer you treatment. That's what we do. Yeah.
Excellent. And I had a follow-up question, if I could.
Go ahead.
I was also wondering if you could explain how your policies have changed to address the situation of money being withdrawn from ATM machines overnight.
Right. So we met with Comptroller Gallagher earlier today and went over, how we've changed some of our policies. We work with 262 people a month, annually, monthly. And quite often, people, out of those people, over 100 are unhoused every evening, right? So a lot of these individuals will come and they'll say, look, I got together $30 and somebody else got together $20 and we need another, $30 to be able to get a room. And so we have helped in those situations, for years. We've helped people to get housing, helped people to buy a tent to sleep in the woods. I don't know that people are always aware of the number of people that sleep outside every night. So, we had a good meeting today with Comptroller Gallagher discussing how we can move forward and have different policies to be able to not give out cash, but, maybe... give motels a block of money, and then when we send people, it's prepaid, that kind of thing. So,
because I don't think it's generally that using cash for such things would be.
It is. It's also it's complex dealing with 400 unhoused people in Ulster County.
Sure. Yeah.
We were doing the best we can, but we understand that that we're at a size now where it's kind of difficult to do that.
Right, I'm gonna go to Legislator Kitchen for the first time.
So these ATM withdrawals, you state, are for tents and hotel rooms and various
and
things.
Food, yeah.
Okay, so usually different organizations I worked for over the years, they always had some petty cash on hand.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's needed for something like that, you would have to get a receipt.
Mm-hmm.
Have you kept all your receipts for your cash?
We kept receipts that we have.
You should have a receipt for a tent.
Yes, I agree with you.
You bought a room for a night, you should have a receipt for a room for the
tent. Yeah, but we were paying for part of the room, so we can't get a receipt for part of the room.
You're paying for part of the tent.
Right. Yeah, we're. I mean, you know, people are saying we've got this much money together.
All right, so
yeah.
Hold on. If we're going to have crosstalk like this, I'm going to ask that all questions get directed through me.
I'm just asking a question.
No, I understand that, but you guys are both talking over each other. You're both contributing to it, so just take your turn.
Well, this was my question.
Please, thank you.
And my question was, if I'm getting money from the government or working for any kind of government agency, and I'm going to spend cash, I'm going to be expected to come back with a receipt of where the cash went.
Yeah.
That's the question I asked. Do you have receipts?
Yes, we have receipts for many of the transactions, not for all of them. Like I said, we can't get a receipt for a partial payment. But I want to be very clear, the money that was used for to give cash to individuals has nothing to do with our local government. It was basically from private funding. Any of our local grants, we put money out, we put in receipts, and then we get reimbursed. So we're not using, you know.
And how do we know what money you have is from private individuals, what money you have is from us?
Because we have to show what we spend, you know, on a grant every month.
And
we get reimbursed.
One more question, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, just
bank statements? The question is directed to March. March, have we extra bank statements to see where these withdrawals have gone?
We received bank statements today. We'll be reviewing them in the coming weeks. And we also, you know, we did have a very good meeting today. We did express both to the administration and to the agency that because of the commingling of funds and because of nonprofit laws in New York State, it really does not matter if it's county money. You know, we are going to need receipts. We need everything documented, whether it's private philanthropic dollars or county dollars. And I think the agency understands that moving forward.
Yes, we do.
One more question.
Yep, go ahead.
Mr. McNamara, has anyone on this legislature ever floated you any kind of money as a loan and they had to be paid back?
No, sir.
No legislator? No member of this legislature?
Oh, okay.
Legislature has ever given you a loan, they floated you some money, you had to pay them back?
Our the president of our board.
What's that person's name?
Kathy Nolan.
Okay.
Did make a personal loan and is being paid back, yeah.
Did you know that?
I learned that today.
Legislator Maloney?
First of all, if they get a qualified opinion, I mean, if you had kept any receipts, you know, it wouldn't have been a problem. We can say it's tense. It's this, I mean, that's just your word. It's large. I mean, it must have been a decent amount of money. Can you tell us how much money is missing that audit acknowledged was unaccounted for, and these are all basically ATM withdrawals?
Yeah, so nothing is missing. We're still in the process of working with our auditors. We're doing a second audit and going through everything. So at this time, I'm not going to comment on that at this time because we're in the middle of an audit. So because you're saying what's unaccounted for, I don't know what's unaccounted for yet because we haven't finished the audit, right?
Tens of thousands?
It's over 10,000, yeah.
Okay. And cash withdrawals that you're saying, did you ever give any of this cash out yourself?
In some cases, yes, for food and partial
rooms. You're giving it to people that are struggling with drug addiction. You're giving them cash because they say, I want to buy a tent. And you'd say, I could buy the tent for you. But they say, well, no, give me cash because I only need half the money. And then you give these individuals cash that are struggling, and you don't think that these tens of thousands of dollars that are coming out of your ATM machine, you don't think that money ends up being used for drugs ever?
I can't say that. I can't say that, that ever it hasn't. Oh,
Joe, you asked a question. Let him answer it.
Okay.
So what I do know is that when individuals come to us, let's say three individuals come to us and they have put together $70, which is not enough for a room, and they need another $30. And I give them $30 and I say, if you can get us some type of receipt, we know that we send peers in the morning to pick them up from the hotel because it's the middle of winter and they're freezing. So, yes, in both cases, I do believe that they use the money for what they said they were going to use it for. Is that true of every single case? I don't know.
And then no one ever thought to say, again, we're just taking cash withdrawals out of an ATM and giving it to people struggling with addiction. And no one ever thought to say, you know what, let's document, even if it's a log, let's just write down what, you know how hard it is to
hear? We did write it down, but we didn't have receipts.
Copies of the dates and the times?
Yes, most of it.
How many? I'd love for that to be shown to the county. And how many different employees had access to these bank accounts? Two questions. How many bank accounts do you have? And how many employees over the last couple of years had access to these bank accounts?
We had six bank accounts and five employees had access. Yeah.
Five different employees.
Mm-hmm.
Access. A lot of your staff end up being new into recovery as well.
Generally, they have more than a year of recovery, but it varies. But those are not these are more people that have more years of recovery that are more senior.
Yeah, I have a question from Legislator McCullough for the first time, then Legislator Grace Harmon for the first time, and then Legislator Kitchen, and then we'll go to the conference.
Out of the five employees that had access, it would require prior approval from you before you. So.
Okay. Thank you. Legislator Grace Harmon?
Yep. Thank you. I have a few questions. You said that Samadhi began in 2019
mm-hmm.
with your own savings account. When did you first receive government funding?
I believe it was at the end of 2019 or the beginning of 2020. That was for the SERPA. It was for a SERPA scholarship program, so Certified Recovery for Advocate training program, part of our educational program.
Okay, so you got funding 3.5 years ago for one very targeted
mm-hmm.
Goal. And as you've received more government funding, did you ever receive any kind of training on how, you know, what that funding meant for your own auditing purposes and how you go about the work that you do? Was there any
comprehensive... Yeah, we've gone to extensive trainings for federal grant programs that we've gotten in the past. State programs, OASIS, we've received funding from OASIS, so they all have extensive training programs, yeah.
Okay. So I'm just thinking that this is a pretty steep learning curve
mm-hmm.
from 2019 and your own savings account to 2024 and a three location enterprise with a mobile unit. That's first of all, that's just impressive growth. So there's that. So I'm trying to account for the kind of the gaps in your ability to do this in a way that has full transparency,
mm-hmm.
And the trainings you've received, and also because, you know, there are just so many bits of misinformation about what is needed and how harm reduction works.
Mm-hmm.
What work have you done, could you do, to really keep close stats on the differences between loss of life in different kinds of housing, right? Because I think that would help
mm-hmm.
many of us understand to have that quantified.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you that we've never had a fatal overdose in any Samadhi facility, which very few, agencies can say. Yeah. Thank you.
Legislator Kitchen, I'm sorry, we're going to go to, oh no, Legislator Collins already went. So we'll go to Kitchen and then Comptroller and then Legislator Collins.
All right, so a couple questions.
Yeah.
I have some questions.
Oh, wait. Well, hold on. I'm going to call on folks. So you're up.
Okay. Are any of your employees KSAC certified?
Yeah. We also have licensed mental health counselors, licensed clinical social workers, licensed master social workers, KSACs, and certified recovery peer advocates.
I'm having a hard time with the crash. I don't understand why you wouldn't have like a company credit card. You would call the motel maybe and say, here, so-and-so needs a room for the night.
Yeah, and we did that.
We've had a hard time struggling with the cash because there are people that have been in your facility that are telling us one thing about the cash, and you're telling us another. And recently, you did have one of your employees, I think, overdosed and passed away, correct?
Yes, in her home, yeah.
Do you know where?
Where she passed?
The drugs came from?
I do not. No, I do not.
That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Legislator Kitchen. let's go to the comptroller, followed by Legislator Collins.
I just wanted to clarify that we are still waiting for some bank statements that are going to be provided. Not all accounts. I mean, they brought us a lot today, and then we identified there's a couple other accounts we need. So I just wanted to put that on the record. And I also wanted to note for the legislature's purposes, the county's first contract with Somati was in 2020.
It was 2020. Thank you.
Legislator Collins?
I just want to ask a couple of questions. So is it fair to say that working with addicts is a messy process?
Yes, sir.
And that messy process sometimes makes things more expeditious than you would like to do. For example, as you stated, you have three people come to you on a freezing night. They need $20 to get a hotel.
It's like tens of thousands of dollars.
I'm talking human beings.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
One speaker at a time here.
I'm done. Thank you.
Anyone else? Final questions? Okay. Oh, sorry. We've got Legislator McCullough and then Legislator Maloney.
It's not a question. Because of personal reasons, I'm hoping we can use the word substance users instead of addicts. I don't like that term because technically all of us are an addict of something. So I've dealt with people in my family who had issues. So if we could use substance users, because all of us are an addict of something, I'm probably a workaholic. So
that's true.
So if you can, please.
All right, Legislator Maloney, and I do want to start wrapping this up because we have a full agenda tonight.
Sure. First, I'd like to say that it's been acknowledged that you've had employees that have been terminated and given leave because of substance use. And now we're hearing that there was five or six employees that had access to ATMs with no oversight and cash.
They had oversight, sir.
Let him ask the question, okay. And you'll get to answer without the intro.
To be honest with you, coming here and saying, yeah, I'm not going to tell you how much is missing, but it sounds like tens of thousands. And we did lock some of it, and it was for partial payments of tents and hotel rooms. It doesn't, especially with the number of people that I'm talking to and have started to talk to other elected officials, and the volume of consistency makes it pretty alarming what may have been going on here. Harm reduction. You know, when you're talking about, and harm reduction is different, you know, and I think there's obviously a place for it, but when you compare it to what other facilities are doing, like Able House or that.
Able House is not harm reduction.
That's my point.
Yeah.
And there is a, if you go to a place like Able House or Ryan House, most of the people you're working with are going to be in recovery, but there is drug testing and a zero tolerance. There is no drugs or alcohol allowed anywhere around the facility. Anyone caught using testing is out.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems an appropriate place for people to be having 100% of their staff basically being in recovery. Do you think that harm reduction in general, with harm reduction, I think you'd agree that you are going to be around live drug use quite often. You're handing out needles and pipes and snorting kits, and you're dealing with people that are using. Do you think that we may have to explore moving to a more of a model where you have far more employees that maybe have never been in recovery for that reason, because you're putting people 6 months, a year in recovery around active drug use constantly. So to take the model of basically 100% of your staff from Able House and those types of places, that kind of traditional model for people working with those in recovery or getting into recovery, and then taking that same model of 100% of your staff working in harm reduction seems to me like something we have to evaluate. Mm-hmm. And when you have staff, OD and the people I'm talking to, you know, the staff member that you tragically lost was lost through drugs that she historically was never on until she worked at Somati.
Not true.
That's what I'm told by loved ones. And to that, are you aware that there are a lot of concern amongst former staff members that the drugs that young lady received was from one of your employees? Was that ever said to you? Hard to believe.
I think there's one disgruntled person who we had to let go of because the person who OD'd actually had issue with that person being at the facility because she felt threatened by him.
Multiple people.
Right, but I'm talking.
Okay, so you asked your question, Joe, and then we're going to let him answer.
Sure.
Right. So yeah, there are rumors. I've heard rumors on Facebook. I've had people write me things on social media. People make up all kinds of stories. I don't really know. I have no evidence or proof. I'm not holding an investigation. I don't know where the drugs came from. We knew that the person had returned to use because they let us know. They were in treatment with us. They were in treatment with our medical director. They were in treatment at the outpatient facility.
Do you know if that individual ever used while working?
Not to my knowledge, but I can't know everything. Obviously.
Were there needles left behind in her office when her office was cleaned
up? No. She sat at the front desk of the outreach center. There were no needles.
All right, I've got legislators Levine and then Collins, and then I want to wrap this up. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question, Mr. McNamara. In terms of, I'm not sure if this was covered earlier, but. Regarding your public, your website, your public facing communications with the public, on your website listing locations for where you're providing services, there's no notation whatsoever in regards to the location on Washington Avenue in Saugerties. There's the community outreach programs and peer recovery services on Salt Hill Road in Kingston, and the outpatient administrative office on Broadway. So if there are services being provided in Saugerties, just why are they not, why is it not being publicized on your website?
Well, I get, there are not services being offered in Saugerties. I mean, it's an emergency housing facility. So generally everybody that comes to the emergency housing facility comes through the Department of Social Services. So it's not like a public, it's not a place where people go for services. Someone from the outside can't go and get services. If they want to be housed, they would go to the Department of Social Services, and then we would get a call, and then we would go through the process.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And I've got Legislator Collins for the last question.
So it seems like there's some question or some concern about the idea of harm reduction, and the kids that I know that have died in the old model, in the model of going to treatments, going for 30-day treatment, 60-day treatment, 90-day treatment. They come out of that treatment. They're not done. We know they're not done. They struggle for a week, a month. At some point they use again. That's when they die.
That's right.
The point is to keep people alive.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you,
Legislator. Yeah. Can I respond?
Sure, you can.
One more song, these questions.
Okay. So, and I also have Legislator McCullough. We'll let David respond, and then we'll go to McCullough, and then Maloney, and then that's it.
So, in terms of harm reduction, what we've done is created a system. from people who are under the bridge on Elmendorf Street to people who are in sustained recovery at our outpatient clinic for, you know, more than 12 months. It's a circle, you know, and sometimes people come to treatment, they do great, and then we find them back out on the street, we pick them up, and then we move through it again. Since 2019, we have saved 1,200 lives, 1,200 overdose reversals between the Narcan that we've distributed to active users and to, you know, the people that we, the overdoses that we've reversed on the street and in our 24-hour street outreach program. People cannot recover. You know, I agree with Legislator Maloney that you know, the sober house, you know, model is one model. We work with many people from Able House actually come to our treatment center. These things are not separate. You know, harm reduction is not over here and abstinence is over here. That's where people fall through the big gap in the middle, right? And as you say, many people come out of a 28-day treatment program that they might be mandated to, and that's the highest rate of overdose because people's tolerances are lowered. So the idea is to keep people alive so they have the opportunity to recover, and we have evidence that works. And not just us. I didn't create harm reduction. It's an international, you know, tons of evidence. Right.
All right. Legislator McCullough.
I just want to say that we should not try to compare Somati to other things. This is his model. And that we should meet people where they are. Everybody's not ready for recovery. So we should do the best we can to help those where they are until they're ready for recovery. And when it comes to recovery, just you have to have a well-made-up mind to do it. Sometimes you're not strong enough. So I'm hands-on. So for me, I'll do whatever I can do to help people where they are until they get to where they need to do. But the only way we're going to do that is if we do it together. So whatever you need, let me know.
All right, Legislator Maloney, one last question.
First of all, here in 1,200, too, I remember hearing that before. That does not match, 10% of the 911 calls and reports that we've had. So that kind of speaks to about 90% of Narcan.
We're not talking about. I'm sorry. Can I respond?
Well, is that
go ahead real quick and then I'll.
Yeah. So we're not talking about Washington Avenue. This is since 2019, and it's not going to correspond because many of those reversals were done by people we've given Narcan to. We're a Narcan distributor by the state. We have a license from the state. So every time we give out Narcan and people come back to us and say, "Hey, I need three more Narcans." We say, can you tell us what you did with the ones that we gave you? I reversed an overdose. We marked down, overdose was reversed. So we didn't personally do them all ourselves. They're not going to correspond with the 911 calls because the majority of overdoses that are reversed are not, 911 is not called. Because the Good Samaritan law doesn't always work out. People are afraid to call. People don't, you know. So the majority of overdoses are not recorded in 911 calls.
My question was to Sorbis, is there any restrictions on, because you can't, it is a little different than the WENT and a lot of these other places that are getting similar funding, because I can go to the WENT and get a room tonight, mm-hmm. but the public can't just get a room at the Washington Avenue facility, right?
They could, yeah. We, I mean, 5 to 10% of the rooms are available for, you know, for people to pay.
I didn't know that. Anybody can just walk up and get a room?
Yeah, if there was one available, we never have rooms available. But yeah, I mean, we have people that come through DSS and then get jobs. But so they no longer. If I could just finish, we have people that come from DSS and then get a job and then they can no longer receive, you know, DSS funding. So at that point, we allow them to pay rent on the room that they're in. Someone from the public could come, but we never have rooms available because we're constantly full. Because we have so many.
If there was a room available, theoretically, could you?
Theoretically, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't have to. Is there any restrictions on the people that stay there? If they're allowed to go get jobs in Saugerties, they're allowed to. Is there?
We have no restrictions. I mean, if they get a job, then they will no longer, qualify for DSS.
So there's people that work that live at these shelters now, Mike?
There can be. I mean, if someone begins to become employed, it would be budgeted, so it might affect their ongoing eligibility.
Right.
And
it depends
might need
how much.
To begin to make a contribution, each case would be based on that individual and how much they were earning.
But there's no policy or anything around restricting hours or time, or are they allowed, are people allowed to get visitors? I'm just trying to figure out if it's exactly like the functioning of one of these motels that we pay, like a Wetton or a Colonial. Is visitation restricted? Are children restricted?
Just like the Wetton, you know, you're not supposed to have people in your room. Christmas, Thanksgiving, things like that, if people make a request, the family can come and visit. Just because we have to be, for safety reasons, we can't just have people coming in.
Mike, is that true? I believe if you're at the Wetton, you're allowed to have a visitor.
Well, our expectation will be that the hotels and motels that we utilize will observe the occupancy.
If it's a permanent, hold on.
Right, the occupancy limitations. And so if a normal hotel transaction where I rented a room at a motel and I sign in on the register and the hotel is charging me because I'm in there, if they begin to observe three or four or five other people in the room with me on a regular basis, they're going to probably have a conversation with me about that and whether it's permissible. Most hotel rooms with two standard beds, the occupancy limit is four people. So, you know, it's the hotel, hotel's responsibility to monitor that.
But you're allowed to have visitors in a regular hotel, and when you would be allowed, is it the same for the Washington Avenue location?
Yeah, we just like to know about it. I mean, we house people in every motel in Ulster County and in Greene County, and, you know, when other people come to visit, we get calls from the managers of the hotels and going like, hey, there's three people in the room. We don't want three people in the room. So kind of the same thing, I mean, as any other motel.
But there's no policy around not allowing a visitor or not having
it. We just like to know about it. You know, just so we're aware of who's in the building and that kind of thing.
So everyone there knows if they're going to have a visitor, they have to run it by the staff that's there.
Yeah, we like to know if
our children, you know, allowed.
We have allowed children on Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Other than that, children are not allowed there.
No.
Why would that be?
Just, you know, safety issues, because we know that we have, you know, people that are, you know, suffering from mental illness. We know that we may have people who are in active drug use. So from a safety standpoint, we don't like to have children staying there.
For safety issues. But the Wetton has kids. All these other places allow kids.
Mm-hmm.
So are they safer, in your opinion?
Are those? No, I know. They're much less safe, actually. I mean, it's out of necessity. I'm just saying what we do. You know, we do have a, I mean, we are allowed as a running a facility that we can make a choice as to, in that regard, right?
I would defer that, you know, whatever the hotel's regulations are around rooms that they're transacting reservations for, they may be able to implement restrictions to the people that they're reserving the rooms to. I don't monitor that type of regulation or restriction.
My last question to Mike, so $90 a night for Samadhi, what does, say, the Wetton get?
I got your request, and I'll be working on that. It varies. It depends. You know, in terms of, I don't know what we're paying the Wetton as of right now, today.
Back in 21, the comptroller did a report. From right. All I see there, a lot of 55, 60, 65, 70, and then Samadhi at 90. I was just wondering why more.
Well, 22, 23, 24.
Yeah, may have gone up some.
Yeah, so there's been
most of these places around 90.
They are around 90. Yep, I could definitely say that.
And who negotiates that?
We basically negotiate those rates with the motels in connection with making the reservations for our clients.
Who's we? Is it you?
It's DSS.
Okay.
And, you know, motels and hotels are commercial establishments. They're not licensed shelters. So they function in a way where they're seeking to maximize the number of reservations they're able to make. And to the degree that those rates can fluctuate over the course of any given time frame because of holidays, seasonal events, and here in Ulster County, that's something that we regularly end up navigating around. If there's a holiday or a festival.
It's millions of dollars is my point, and it's more of a reimbursement, not a contract. So there's literally no oversight. So a couple of people in DSS get to negotiate with 20, 25 different motels and give them all a different rate, and it's up to a handful of people with no legislative oversight. Might not even be purchasing oversight. Like, but so that's why.
Yeah, this is no longer germane to Samadhi. This is no longer germane to Samadhi. So
never will.
I am going to move us forward here. Comptroller, I saw your hand up, but unless it's.
I just want to say my office does not approve payments to motels for any emergency housing. None of that comes through my office.
Okay. All right. So thank you, David, for being here. Thank you, everyone who came to ask questions. I appreciate it very much. And anyone who wants material, anyone needs to take it. But we are going to move into the agenda, and I'm going to.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to entertain a motion to approve the February 1st, 2024 meeting minutes.
I'll move.
All right. Moved by Legislator Grace Harmon and seconded by Collins. Any discussion on the minutes from last month? All those in favor? Any opposed? All right. First resolution, resolution number 105, approving execution of a contract for $192,400 instituted by the county with the Hudson Valley Center for Veteran Reintegration through the Department of Mental Health. And I'll go to Commissioner McDonald for a quick overview, and then we'll entertain a motion to approve.
Sure. So this is an annual update for this contract. The center does, they operate the wire vet-to-vet peer program, and they're offering peer services to veterans. They've actually expanded over the past 3 years that we've been doing this contract now that they have social workers that are there to be able to help with someone who may be experiencing a crisis, and doing that through a veteran's lens.
Sure.
They are having an update so that they have the ability to do more groups, and they have activities, and then they have their core kayak building program.
Great. Any questions from the committee on the veteran program? Any discussion? All right, I'll entertain a motion to approve resolution 105.
Thank you.
All right, moved by Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Kitchen. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 96, authorizing the County of Ulster to submit an application and assurances to the New York State Environmental Faculties Corporation for round four of the Septic System Replacement Fund through the Department of Planning, and we'll go to Director Doyle for a quick overview.
Thank you. Chair, this is an allocation of funding from DEC based on the estimate of the number of septic systems within 250 feet of streams as defined by DEC as being potentially impaired. So if we apply for this funding, we will more than likely get it. It's somewhere between $300,000 and $350,000. I gave you the backup that showed the areas in the county, the streams in the county, and the estimate of number of septic systems within it. It's a $10,000, which requires a one-for-one match.
Okay. Any questions from the committee?
What's for that?
Comments, concerns, points of discussion? Legislator Collins.
I believe it's a typo. This came up in a different meeting. It should be facilities, not faculties.
Thank you.
And the other question I have is, I'm definitely in favor of this, but is there a list of specific addresses that we can send letters to saying that they might, the residents, are we sending letters out to let them know that they're eligible for this, or how do they find out their possibility of fixing their septic?
Go ahead.
So we would anticipate that we would work with the health department in terms of where they have failed septic systems rather than try to mail to all the residents along the streams.
Okay.
But we can use the GIS work if it becomes an issue with respect to the number of applications. I think our biggest concern, Legislator Collins, is the fact that $10,000 is not a lot of money in today's budget for what septic systems replacements and repairs cost. I would add that there are no administrative fees associated with this, and we may end up being back to the legislature should we move this forward with the need for some administrative help with regard to this. Our health department is extremely busy. We're going to work with our Soil and Water Conservation District. As well, we may need some additional
consulting work in order to move this, in order to make sure we move this forward. We do have a long time frame. We've tried to negotiate with EFC about the time we have to implement this program, but there's a heavy lift here on the admin side.
Yep, Legislator Stewart. I just wanted to point out, excuse me, following up on Director Doyle's comments, that the last resolution that you'll be voting on this evening, number 31, is for creating and funding a position in the Department of Health, the environmental agent, to assist in this sort of industry.
Thank you, Legislator Stewart. Any other questions, comments, concerns? All right, I'd like to entertain a motion to approve resolution number 96, yeah, moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator Grace Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 98, reappointing members to the Ulster County Community Action Committee Board of Directors. This is an internal one. I think these are mostly reappointments, and often they will have someone appointed in their place. So it doesn't necessarily mean these people will actually be serving. I don't think anyone from the administration will be answering questions about this, so I'll do my best to answer questions if anyone has any. Does anyone have any questions about the Community Action Board? Okay. With that, I'll entertain a motion to reappoint these members.
I make the motion.
Yep, moved by Legislator McCullough. Seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Resolution number 99, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to implement services under the Raise the Age Plan for SFY, I'm guessing that's something fiscal year.
Fiscal year.
State fiscal year, thank you, Jeff. State fiscal year 2024, Department of Social Services. Commissioner Iaposti, if you want to just give us a quick overview of the program.
Sure. The funding for this originates from Office of Children and Family Services, and it's focused on providing direct services for youth at risk of out-of-home placement because of criminal activities or behaviors. You might recall in the last few years that the Raise the Age initiative was arrived at in order to provide funding for 16 and 17-year-olds who were involved in criminal activity so that they were not incarcerated with the adult criminal population. So we worked on submitting a plan, which was approved by OCFS, so it supports the casework, after-hours casework service, detention services, if they are ordered by the court for PIMS and JD, and we provide with service providers including Family House Respite, the Youth Advocate Mentor Program, Multisystemic Therapy Unit at Coordinated Children's Services, the Family of Woodstock DASH Program, which is developing adolescent and social harmony, and then obviously detention and residential placement as a last resort if that is ordered by the court.
Any questions for DSS? Right. I will entertain a motion to, or any discussion, any comments. I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 99.
I move it.
Moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by Legislator Grace Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 100, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $36,071, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into by the county with Family of Woodstock for the Department of Social Services. And again, I will go to Commissioner Iaposti to give us a brief overview.
Sure. So this is a contract with Family of Woodstock, who has oversight responsibility for daycare registrations and inspections. They investigate all complaints, monitor renewals of registrations and license, and conduct safety assessments at daycares. This additional funding was arrived at because of an increase in the allocation that Ulster County received for daycare programming. And based on the proportional increase of the allocation, there was an additional amount for these responsibilities of the $36,071.
Any questions for DSS? Any comments, points of discussion? This is a state-funded program. All right, I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution 100. Moved by Legislator Grace Norman, seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Resolution number 101, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $55,000 entered into by the County and Family of Woodstock through the Department of Social Services. Again, Commissioner Iacocci.
This is related to Family of Woodstock's operation of the DD Residential Washburn House, and it is for expenditures incurred in connection with shelter and related services for survivors of domestic violence. And the amendment allows us to pay expenditures that were incurred over the course of 1/1/23 to 12/31/23, which were a little bit higher than anticipated because we had a higher volume of services that we provided through the Washburn House.
Any questions for Commissioner Iacocci? Any comments, concerns, points of discussion? So I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 101. Moved motion. By Legislator McCullough, seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 102, approving the execution of a contract for $300,000 entered into by the county with Ruffco through the Department of Social Services. And again, Commissioner Iacocci.
Thank you. So this is a contract that is for a time period of 3 years, 2024, 2025, and 2026, at the rate of $100,000 per year. This was a contract that we began in 2023 with Ruffco to specifically focus on bringing affordable housing assistance services to our emergency housing population. This focuses on emergency housing clients who are in hotels, motels, or shelters, and provides engagement to try to connect them to permanent housing opportunities and programming, things like ESHI vouchers, Section 8 vouchers, and to just provide support to them. We all know that there is a permanent affordable housing inventory crisis right now, but we want to do everything that we can to support our emergency housing clients that are in emergency housing placements that do try to transition and find permanent housing. So that's the underlying purpose for this contract.
Yeah, Legislator McCullough. I have a couple of questions. One, Ruffco give out vouchers, right? When they give it to the clients, are the clients aware of an expiration date?
Yeah. What happens in connection with the vouchers is that this is something that Ruffco has responsibility for. They'll process an application from the individual or family for a voucher amount for a time frame, and it's only arrived at when the recipient finds a location where they'll be able to utilize that voucher for. But Ruffco administers Section 8, so we felt that that, you know, relationship that they have and awareness, and they have Section 8 vouchers that they are obviously trying to promote and connect to people who need permanent housing.
Okay. If the voucher expires, does that person have to start from step one, or is the voucher amended with a new expiration date?
I'd have to defer that question, Legislator, because I don't know enough about the parameters of the vouchers. But I'm certain, you know, that Ruffco could give us more detail on that. I think that initially they're for a period of 1 year, and provided the recipient continues to meet eligibility criteria, they're renewed.
Okay.
Legislator Collins?
So the scope of services for this says that the firm, meaning Ruffco, must provide us with a monthly report of clients by name, et cetera. Can we get a summary of that at the legislature level? Just, I don't need to know the names. Obviously, I don't care about the names. I want to know, like, the numbers, and the numbers are just so we can see how we're trending and how this is going.
Sure. And in anticipation that you might ask that question, we implemented this contract in 2023 for August through December, and our data for the 5 months, August through December 2023, and the contract cost was $37,000. Ruffco provided us with the monthly data, so we were able to engage 119 individuals and families Total number of engagements were 786, and we were able to transition 7 individuals and families into permanent housing.
Okay.
And we'll continue to provide that data. It's part of their requirements to comply with under the contract.
Thank you.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? So I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 102. Moved by Legislator McCullough. all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution 103, approving the execution of a contract for $379,909 entered into by the county with Family Services, Inc. through the Department of Mental Health. And I would defer to Commissioner McDonald for a brief overview.
So these are the state of research knowledge that supports the Ulster Prevention Council that is under this. The Ulster Prevention Council is our primary prevention board. They advise the county sex office, they advise the Department of Health and the Department of Mental Health. They give community education. They do a lot of work in schools. They're responsible for surveying all of our districts to determine current usage for our students so that we know where to be able to put the primary prevention and the activities.
Any questions, concerns?
Family Services.
Yep, go ahead, Legislator Kitchen.
They're located up near the 911 Center, is that correct? The Behavioral Family Services?
Go ahead, Commissioner McDonald.
Family Services of Hudson Valley?
That's Family Services, Inc. That's the same agency. Their clinic is located at the Golden Hill, but Ulster Prevention Services, Ulster Prevention Center is at Aaronport.
You know, it's a shame that the people working up at Golden Hill can't afford to pay them the money they need. There's a big turnover rate there. And as soon as somebody with mental health illness gets to become comfortable with a therapist or their psychiatrist up there, 2 months later they're out of there and they still know what they say. They just can't afford to stay here. Shame. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
So it's a constant turnaround of staff up there. There's no retention.
Do you want to speak to that, Commissioner McDonald?
If I could ask the whole.
It's sad because they do good things. And I know a few of those therapists up there.
The next contract is the clinic itself, so if I could go into more.
Yeah, so why don't we do that? So Legislator Kitchen, can we continue this conversation for the next resolution?
Sure.
Great. Any other comments on this particular program of family services? All right, so I will entertain a motion to adopt.
I'll move it.
All right, moved by Legislator Collins.
Second.
Seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 104, approving the execution of a contract for $9,420,000 entered into by the county with Family Services, Inc. through the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald.
Yes. So this is the clinic that we were referring to. This clinic, when the county gave them their licenses to perform mental health services, they went into an agreement with then Hudson Valley Mental Health, now Family Services, in order to create this contract to do shared staffing to be our safety net adult clinic. So we've had this contract now, I want to say this is the fourth four-year update that we're doing. It's a not to exceed of $1.9 million every year, and then $9 million for the total of the contract term for 4 years. Because the basis of what we're paying for is staffing, we have one clinical supervisor and 4 social workers that are working, and the psychiatrist. We are basically, the county still is staffing these positions. So the retention for those guys, most of them have been here 15 years or more.
What's that?
The clinicians at Family Services. The ones that have a higher rate of turnover are the ones that are in the smaller clinic in Highland.
All right, well, so, I'm talking about the one here on Golden Hill,
mm-hmm.
okay, because I've seen them come and go. See, I'm involved up there. I have people very close to me that I have to bring up there. And I know who's coming, I know who's going. So
if I can...
Yep, go ahead, Commissioner.
The majority of the staff that is in Kingston are county clinicians that have been there 10 years or more.
I guess, but the psychologists and the therapists,
all the psychiatrists.
That's what I'm talking about. The ones that okay the medicine, okay the therapists, okay, there's a big turnover.
If I can.
Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner.
There is a huge issue with psychiatry in the country. There are not enough psychiatrists in school. We're about to be in a very big, a bad position in maybe 5 or 10 years. So this is not an issue that is germane to family services. This is an issue throughout our entire system. And what's allowing for us to be able to buffer this some more is the changes in education law that allow for nursing practitioners, psychiatrists, psychiatric nurse practitioners to be able to take on more without needing to have the supervision of MDs. So that's how we're trying to navigate this. But it is absolutely correct that there is a high degree of turnover for the psychiatrist.
Right, so understand, if you are suffering from mental illness and you get close to someone where tell them your feelings, you trust them, because trust is a big thing with people with mental illness, and all of a sudden, boom, next week, they're gone without any explanation.
If I can.
Yeah, go ahead, Commissioner Redondo.
But you're still responding, you're still speaking of the psychiatrist, because what I'm going to come back to is that the majority of the clinicians there's about six clinicians that
you
are there.
Clinicians.
Hold on.
About therapists? Six clinicians?
So, Commissioner Redondo.
And then
Eric, hold your follow-up questions until she's done.
I'm speaking about clinicians, I'm speaking about licensed therapists. Right. And there are six licensed therapists that are on staff there. Five of them have been there for at least 10 years or more. Not to say that it is not very upsetting to have a psychiatrist or the nurse practitioner constantly moving along, and that is true. And the other thing is that we've also had to up the... restructure the budget so that we can recognize the fact that psychiatrists and nurse practitioners at this point can command their own costs. They're paying their medical director over $300,000, mm-hmm. and that's what you need to do in order to retain psychiatrists. So this is an issue, again, not germane to family services, but definitely.
Okay, should I ask now?
Yes. Go ahead.
Can you tell me what the psychologist there might get paid?
Understood.
There actually is. There is some data in the attachment.
Right.
For what they're getting paid. But I mean, if I may just speak to this.
I'm a very big supporter of mental health, and we have a crisis in this county.
I can see that. Yeah. The issue of turnover with some of our contract vendors is huge. And for a variety of social services. So I'm really excited to hear you. Tuned into this issue, and this is why I want this salary information in here. But it's probably not an issue that we're going to be able to solve tonight. Legislator Collins.
Yeah, I'm looking at Schedule B, and the way it's written, it says the agency shall bill county's mental health department on a monthly basis for the services performed in accordance with the following schedule. New director, $100,000. So the way that I read this, and I know this is not what's intended, is we pay them $100,000 per month. So later in that list of payments, you have per hours for certain people, but the salaries you don't list as per year. So I know it's a very small technical detail, but it looks to me like someone could interpret this contract as we're paying that money per month instead of per year.
All right, I make a motion to approve the resolution.
I'm into it. So let's get a second on that motion. We can still have discussion. So let's get a second on that motion, because this is his first motion to approve something here. So
Second
by Legislator Dave Harmon. So the motion's on the table. There's still some room for discussion. Commissioner McDonald, did you want to have a last word?
There were two things that I wanted to add. One is that is there a suggestion as to how it would be reworded for clarity?
Just add per year on the salaries. That's all I'm asking for.
We'll do that. Yep. Do we need to if the motion has passed, do we need to do that before it goes to waiver?
No, you can just replace. This is because we're not changing the resolution.
Okay.
We're changing the backup.
Okay.
So, unless Legislator Collins is prepared to vote no tonight.
No, I'm going to vote no. I think it's important to vote.
Okay. Yeah. And then the last thing that I will add is, and my boss reminded me, that when we were restructuring this contract, though we didn't add money to it, we didn't increase it at all, what we did was we allowed for them to fill at a different rate, which will give them the opportunity to raise salaries, to recruit and to retain. So they're raising their salaries across the board.
Great. All right, if there's no further questions or discussion, I'll call a question on resolution number 104. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 106. Approving the execution of a contract for $240,000 as entered by the county with Family Home Health Care, Inc. through the Office for the Aging. And I will go to Director Copenhaver for
Chairman, this is a two-year contract, accounted for in our budget for one of our licensed agencies. We have several who supply us mostly with personal care aides, level two, if we're lucky enough, and taking care of our hundreds of clients who need it.
All right. Any questions for
Officer Lee?
Nope. I just have one question.
Collins.
Sure.
This is basically to the last topic. Is so looking at their hourly, it's $27 and $27.50 for hourly. Is that competitive? Do we get? I mean, I don't know the wage scale, but
is
that
a great wage?
Is there a good wage for this role?
Something like $50, okay. You get paid
$25.
Okay. I don't know.
Again,
it's just expecting like, because hiring people is.
Legislator said before, people can kind of command their salaries, and home care is a tough field, and we'd like to make sure that people make a more than a living wage.
Yeah.
Family Home Health Care happens to be one of our agencies that supplies us with a lot of aid, so we give them more business because we can rely on them.
Okay. Great. Legislator Kitchen.
I worked in this field with different agencies years ago in a different life. Devereaux Foundation, ARC, just different organizations like that. The pay at the time was $9 or $10 an hour. Hmm. And what I witnessed and what I saw going on in these places just made me disgusted. People working double hours and triple hours, they're getting frustrated, they're getting tired. If you want to put your parent in a nursing home, no matter what setting we're talking about here, when you're dealing with people that are being paid a salary, to take care of other people, you have to pay them a good salary because you're dealing with the care of another individual. If you're getting paid $10 an hour, that person's going to get $10 an hour.
And may I get on my soapbox for 30 seconds?
Sure, yeah.
In home care, and that's what we do is keep people at home, we are saving everybody's dollars because we're keeping folks out of institution, and that's part of our mission. So the more we have the support from home care agencies, the better off we all are.
Great. Yep. So I've got Legislator McCullough and then Collins.
What's the minimum age to qualify for home care?
There is no minimum
age
because there are kids who get 24-hour care at home too or are permanently disabled. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Legislator Collins?
Just to be clear, I want to make sure there was enough money. Not that it was too much money.
It is.
Just
thank
to be
you.
Clear.
Great.
And if it wasn't, we'd just ask for more.
So I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 106.
So moved.
Moved by Legislator Kitchen, seconded by
Legislator
Grace Harmon. Thank you. Thank you so much. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 107. Approving the execution of a contract for $150,000 as entered by the county with Home Health Care and Companion Agency, Inc. through the Office for the Aging. And I now remember from reviewing the agenda that there are a few of these for similar services. Is that right?
But there is a difference with this one.
Okay.
I'd like to explain very briefly. Yes, this is one of our licensed agencies, but we worked out a deal with them and with Unlimited Care to establish a dedicated aide from each agency, which would make an enhanced rate, get mileage, because a lot of these folks don't even get mileage when they drive their own cars around the county, to make sure that they take all of our clients, because it was a kind of a Band-Aid approach with aid coverage. So both agencies were more than willing to do that, And home health care and companion both supplies us with regular aides and a dedicated 40-hour a week aid. So actually this number, you will probably re-see me again when I ask for more money on this contract in a couple of months, because for whatever reason, budget didn't give us the entire amount. So we will be asking for that. It's accounted for, but for whatever reason, they lowered it. I don't know why. So just letting you know that we'll be back for this particular contract.
Okay. Any questions from the committee or any other legislators?
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I'm reading his mind.
Okay.
What's the dollar amount you were requesting?
It's 150, but I think our, I'm sorry, I'm not the contract person.
That's okay.
I have smarter people doing that than me. It's a little over 200,000, okay. So it's not a huge amount more, okay. Just to accommodate both of those contracts with this agency.
Any other questions? All right, I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 107.
I move it.
Moved by Legislator Collins.
I'll second.
Seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Resolution number 108, approving the execution of a contract for $150,000 entered into by the county with Kingston Works, a division of Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue campus, to the Office for the Aging. And Director Copenhagen, do you want to?
Yeah, this one's a little different. This supplies a full-time and a part-time salary to our New York Connects staff who reside in our office through Kingston Works. If you have any questions about that, I'm happy to entertain them.
Any questions? I will entertain a motion.
I'm
moved. Moved by Legislator Collins, seconded by
McCullough.
Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 109, approving execution of a contract for $156,000 entered into by the county with Unlimited Care Inc. through the Office for the Aging. Director Pibblehaver, do you want to?
As I mentioned before, this was the other dedicated aid contract plus the licensed work that they do for us with Unlimited. Same thing that I described.
All right, any questions on Resolution 109? Well, with that, I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 109, moved by Legislator Harmon,
seconded
by Legislator McCullough. all those in favor of Resolution number 109?
Aye.
Any opposed? Did we have any votes while Eric was out?
Yes, we voted on 107 and 108.
Eric, do you want to record a vote on 107 or
108? He already did on 108. I'm holding it.
Oh. Okay, great. So you're out of the room for 107. Do you want?
Sorry.
Yeah.
You're out for both. You should say yes.
Where's
for both.
Where's the paper? I don't know.
Well, you might have signed the paper, but you weren't here to vote on it, which is fine. But you're voting.
Like I was literally out for 30 seconds.
I know, but we moved quick. I'm just giving you the opportunity. This is when this will happen on the floor as well. If you leave to go to the bathroom, then you'll come back and Vicki will ask, and yeah. Then the cameras are rolling. At least now it's just YouTube.
Yeah. You signed for 108 already, so.
Yeah. So I'm asking just so that it's on the record and it's in the minutes. So Legislator Kitchen, you're voting in support of 107 and 108.
Approving the execution of a contract for $150,000 entered into by the county and home health and companion agency office for the age. I'm here for that.
Okay.
For the vote.
Okay. I'm all in favor of Resolution 107.
Great.
And I will vote in favor of Resolution 108.
Wonderful.
I did.
Thank you.
For time for.
Wonderful. And all right. And so now we're
down for
107.
Yep. We'll get it over to you. And now we are on Resolution number 110. Approving the execution of a contract for $310,000 entered by the county with WillCare Inc., which is doing business as WillCare, without the Inc., Office for the Aging. It's a valid thing. My business is the same thing. Anyway, Office for the Aging, Director Copenhagen.
It's our biggest contract. That's why the numbers are a little bit higher, and they give us pretty much almost the most amount of aid, so we like to keep them in business with us.
Excellent. Any questions from the committee? Any comments, concerns? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution number 110.
I guess it's me.
Yep, Legislator Grace Harmon. Thank you. And seconded by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Our last resolution tonight is resolution number 31, creating and funding a position in the Department of Health, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget. And we have one of the sponsors here. We have the sponsor here, Legislator Stewart. And do you want to just give an overview of where you're at, if you've had any conversations with the executive branch or anything?
Sure. This had initially come before this committee last year. And then we tried to, they did not receive the funding. We tried to pass it as a budget amendment, and unfortunately that failed. And the reason that failed, and also I should add, it's co-sponsored by Kathy Miller and Tom Cochran. We had tried to get this passed in the form of a budget amendment, and the executive's office spoke and said that they were in the process of digitizing the records, and because of that, they felt that probably the administrative position would not be required because of that digitization process. At least that's how I took it. And so we withdrew it as a budget amendment, and following further conversations with Commissioner Smith, who is not here this evening. She related to me that this position is desperate. She was saying that it's needed because of new state mandates that have come down. And she said, also was discussed how there's been a great deal of new construction and renovations, and these inspectors who go out and look at septic systems and that sort of thing. So there's been an uptick in work. There's these new mandates coming down from the state. And the main thing is that the main reason why it's needed is because these inspectors are spending so much of their time doing administrative functions when ideally they should be out inspecting. And as Director Doyle just mentioned, they're anticipating their workload increasing more, assuming Resolution 96 goes through the body. So it's just more duties and more responsibilities are keep coming upon the environmental department, the department. I know that Tom Cochran who is a building inspector, and I know that you also could probably testify.
I'm a building inspector.
That that these people are asked to do more and more and more. And Commissioner Smith says that this is a desperately needed position. And for that reason, I hope you will consider voting for this resolution.
I'll make a motion to vote for it.
Okay, well, we can do that, but I would like to...
Don't you make a motion and go to discussion?
That's how we used to do it. I've changed it this year where we've been having discussion and then doing a motion for it. Because sometimes what ends up happening is when we take no action, you have a motion that just dies on the table and gets superseded by another motion. So I made a whole speech about it at the last meeting, but basically we're doing discussion first on it. So if you don't mind, just hold off. Because I'm very curious about where the county executive is at on it.
Sure. Yeah, so... As Legislator Stewart said, this was originally proposed by the Health Department as part of their budget amendment. We added a certain number of headcount, I think it was around 40, and there were over 84 headcount requested throughout the entire county government. So it's difficult choices needed to be made. All the departments are being asked to do more and more and more. There's more mandates on all the departments. This is one that we were not ready to fund because, like you said, we really need to be moving towards digital records, and we have the software to do that through Granicus. We have a module with them that it's ready and just needs to be put in place. We're not saying that this is not needed per se, but it's just that we need to adjust the workflow to move towards digitization and then, based on that new workflow, figure out what positions are needed. Also, in the budget, the Environmental Health Department got, I believe, a number of new positions, more than other departments. So we're mindful, I just say that to say we're very mindful of the need in environmental health, and we've been steadily adding positions over the past 2 years. In addition, the department is responsible for implementing a new lead rental registry. That is a new state mandate. We're going to be getting state funding.
That she referred to.
Yes, but we will be getting state funding for that. We just learned what the allocation was. With that money, they will most likely be adding new staff. But again, we need to figure out the workflow for that. They're required to submit a plan to the state by the end of the month, an initial plan. And then the program gets designed from there. So I think that we need to work with a department to figure out what their needs are as we're implementing these new responsibilities and trying to move them away from paper-based forms.
With the newfound information, I'm just going to withdraw my motion.
Okay. Yep, Legislator Grace Harmon.
I've just got a question. Would it be a reasonable middle ground to amend this so that it was for a contract, so it's for it's a limited position for a limited period of time rather than a permanent position to bridge this gap? Because it sounds like we're kind of we know where we're going, but we're not there yet.
Right.
And in the interim, there's still need.
If I could tack on to what Legislator Harmon just said, how long, what is the time period between now and when the digitization process actually kicks in?
We've started the process of discovery with the department. It basically involves meeting with them, getting a sense of what their workflow is. We also want to talk to the users of those forms, like small business owners, restaurant owners, food trucks, to figure out what does the public need when it comes to applying for licenses and things. Mm-hmm. So it's not a quick process, that is true, but it's because we want to make sure we do it right and we're not creating a new workflow that is worse than what is currently exists.
Responsible. So I've got Legislator Collins next, unless Legislator Grace Harmon has a follow-up question. Okay, Legislator Collins.
In my business experiences, there have been times when throwing more resources at a problem just makes the problem take longer. And unless we know where we're going to throw a resource and that there's a place for that to fit comfortably, I'm not quite in favor of that yet until we know that we actually need that.
Legislator Stewart. I was just going to add that the last time I discussed this with Commissioner Smith would have been in January. And this was the earliest that this resolution could have. So I don't know if the situation may have changed since my conversation with her, but when I had my conversation in January, she was quite adamant that this was desperate. So.
I did speak to her today, and she wasn't pushing for it at that time.
Well, it may be that the situation has changed. So
we love change.
I'll let you love the news that I'm going to share in a moment about the Department of Health change. That's foreshadowing. But I support us not moving forward.
No, we're all in suspense.
Yeah. I'm going to make you wait, too, because it's not even the next thing on the agenda.
Oh, fine. So I sat through this whole meeting. Okay, never mind.
I would, my feeling, if I may, is to hold off on it for now, for the reasons that that the executive just shared. Is everyone comfortable with that?
Yep.
Okay. So that's our last resolution. We have a couple of items of new business. First item of new business is establishing the subcommittee on housing. This is something that was brought up at our last meeting, something that we've talked about fairly extensively. I'll explain in a second, but I'll just say I looked into how subcommittees can be formed, and it turns out that as chair, I can just unilaterally do it. And but rather than do that in kind of a quiet way, I decided to have Vicki write up a thing. That was her recommendation to say what we're going to be doing here. So. Our committee has been in discussions to create a subcommittee on housing, and I'd like to formalize that now. The Subcommittee on Housing will be the central body for receiving updates on the status of county housing initiatives, including updates on the Housing Action Fund, Affordable Rental Upgrade Program, Rental Assistance Program, and other programs that may begin following this subcommittee's creation. Additionally, the Housing Subcommittee may examine existing policies for their efficacy, as well as propose new policies, including but not limited to examining compliance of Ulster County respite housing policy, considering the need for policy on unreasonable rent increases, measuring the success of existing programs and providing recommendations for expansion or redirection, just to name a few items. And the philosophy here, in the past we had these working groups on housing. There were three working groups at the prior term of this committee established. We saw that through a couple of years. This is going to centralize those into one. It's going to make it a formal subcommittee, so it actually has staff support. And then the folks that will serve on it would be able to coordinate with the county executive's team to make sure the meetings are a time that works for everyone. Essentially, when we added housing into the purview of the health committee, we set in motion a lot of housing policies, and all of those policies now report to different committees. So being able to tie it all back to this committee is important, and I felt that it was important to create this committee for that. So with that, I would like to nominate Legislator Collins as chair of that housing subcommittee, Legislator McCullough to serve on it, and Legislator Lopez, who isn't here tonight, but Legislator Lopez to serve on it as well, so that we have minority and majority representation. And without objection, I am advancing that subcommittee tonight. Legislator Stewart.
Are those the only three members on that committee?
So here's the tricky thing. The subcommittee cannot constitute in and of itself a quorum of this committee. And it has to be members from this committee. So three is the maximum. I was dismayed.
It has to be
members of this committee because it's a subcommittee of this committee. And the membership itself can't constitute a quorum of this committee, because if something was voted on, which there doesn't necessarily have to be things that are voted on in the subcommittee, but if something was voted on, that would technically count as a vote, or it could count as a vote of both committees, and that would be not what we want to do. So I'm told, and I've looked into this with Councilor Verghucci, that it has to be a maximum of three members. Everyone is invited, everyone can go, everyone can participate. If there are ever votes, we just have to make sure that only three people's votes count on that subcommittee, and that's why there are only three formal members. Does that make sense? Okay. Any other questions, comments, concerns?
Do we know which committee is going to be meeting?
No, we're going to figure it out because it hasn't been scheduled yet.
And the entire body will be alerted to.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
Since it's a subcommittee meeting, it will also be open to the public.
Yeah, it'll be like, unlike those working group meetings that we had that were very, very informal, they weren't like on a calendar, right? Like these are like on the calendar, publicly noticed, minutes, agendas,
And you have legislative clerk.
And, yeah, I'm not promising that it's going to be Michael, but it's going to have legislative staffing, which is why I'm very happy about this change. I had a really good conversation with Deputy Chair Lopez about this today, who, you know, he agreed to be on the committee, and he's very happy about it being a formal subcommittee. He shared my discomfort with it being kind of informal working group. So I think this is better, and I'm glad that both me and Craig are on the same page about that. So it's got bipartisan support.
As someone who took part in some of those informal meetings, I think that sounds great. So
awesome. Thank you. Cool. Yep.
I would just ask, since a lot of the housing work comes through the planning department, I would just ask for some consideration in terms of timing of those committee meetings, particularly as it relates to some of the staffish efforts here. I mean, I'd hope we don't schedule these late in the afternoon or very early in the evening for the committee to meet.
I talked to Kai about it a little bit, just to give him a heads up about this, and he had been regularly attending at least a low-income group before, so... And that's why, like, for those asking about when it is, we don't know, because I really want to, the people that are going to be involved in this, I want them to weigh in on the time. So
you know, if someone from the planning department now reports to someone up in five committees, it would not be nice not to have a third kind of six.
Well, this is what I mean. There were. This is one subcommittee where there were three working groups before.
Yeah, so I get it.
You know, math is on our side on that point. All right. Any other questions? Okay. I really appreciate it. I'm excited for the subcommittee to form, and I'm very excited for Legislator Collins to chair it. This is something that we've been talking about since about a year ago, honestly, and it'll be really good. I have the highest level of confidence in the members and everyone else that will participate. All right. So that's one item of new business. The next item of new business is a forthcoming local law on modifications to the charter for the Commissioner of Public Health. So there were a number of charter revisions that were not adopted by the legislature at the very last minute last year, and those still need to be adopted. And this one, changing the qualifications for the Commissioner of Public Health, is going to be a late resolution that's going to be before Laws and Rules. It wasn't in time to be before this committee, but I wanted it on the agenda anyway. And the reason that it is a late resolution and the reason it's important that we amend the charter to change the qualifications for the Commissioner of Public Health is because Commissioner Smith is going to be retiring, and this is going to be her last month, and there needs to be a job search. And right now, the requirement, which a lot of counties are moving away from, is that we have to hire a doctor. And it is, number one, very hard to hire a doctor, and number two, you know, not necessarily what, not we might not, that might not be the most qualified person is a physician.
And by doctor, you mean a medical.
A medical doctor, right. So, for example, an infectious disease expert with a PhD could not be our Commissioner of Health, despite the fact that the last 3 years seems like that would be, you know, the type of thing we might think about in the future, you know. Not that Commissioner Smith didn't do a great job. She did a wonderful job, and I really wish she was here that we could celebrate her, you know, her tenure here. You know, removing that requirement would be helpful. I mean, we could hire a podiatrist, but not a you know, infectious disease expert, for example. So that's a change that I certainly support. I just wanted to give everyone a heads up. This is going to be on the Laws and Rules agenda for next week. But because it's related, it would have otherwise been before this committee. So I just wanted to let everyone know. Any questions about that, or Deputy Executive, do you want to?
I can add a little more just to expand a little. So the state law allows for counties to either have a commissioner, or in the case if you have less than 250,000 people population, you can have a public health director. The public health director is the title for the person who doesn't have a medical license. They have the same responsibilities. Like you said, they have to have the requisite education. They have to have a master's in public health. A certain number of years of experience. They also have to be approved by the State Department of Health in the same way that a commissioner would. They just don't have to have a medical license. So if that were the direction that we needed to go in, they would technically be called a public health director and not a commissioner. But that's just I just wanted to make sure that everybody was aware it's grounded in state law.
Great. Any other questions? All right, well then we'll move on to the prior agenda item because I've got bad news. I just got texted by Vicky, and apparently I do need to take a voice vote for setting up the subcommittee. So I'd like to nominate, I guess what she meant was I can make the nomination and take a voice vote. It doesn't actually have to be nominated for more. So I would like to nominate Legislator Collins to chair the committee and Legislators McCullough and Lopez to serve on the committee, to form a committee of three people for the housing subcommittee, the subcommittee on housing. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. And Vicky, if you're not happy, please text me again. Power of YouTube. All right. We have one last item of new business, which is just a reminder that we've got this hard hat tour of the Westchester Medical Center mental health beds, which they've been talking about for a long time. This is something, just for background, this is something that Chair Criswell set in motion, and I'm really grateful to him for doing that. He was talking with them and asked if we could go and see, and then that, you know, I got looped in. So I'm hoping that folks will be able to join for that. I think it's next when?
It'll be the 13th, which is Wednesday at 3 p.m.
Yeah.
I need to know who's coming. A lot of you have RSVP'd, but if you're coming, yeah, I got you.
Okay.
So if you're coming, it's the 13th at 3 p.m. That's a Wednesday. I just need to know by Monday, really, who's coming, because they need to. You have to go, like, if you go walk through their safety protocols and all that, they need to have the number of hard hats, sign in, sign out, because this is an active construction site.
Yeah.
So please email me.
Hard hat don't count.
Hard hat don't count.
No. Don't wear stilettos.
Yes. Yeah. Closed toe shoes, please.
Yeah. Great.
I just responded to you.
Okay.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to... I don't know if people remember, but on the 19th, we had photos to come early. And I'm not taking bids for somebody to stand next to me. This one's on the house.
You have an open house.
Yes.
Okay, we're getting loopy. So that's the end of our new business. We don't have any old business. So with that, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
You good? All right, moved by... Legislator Kitchen.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Legislator Grace Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody.
You're almost there.